This is a Renewed Covenant Ministry message. Every message delivered by this ministry strives to show the relevance of the most important covenant ever revealed to God's people, the New Covenant, a covenant offering grace through faith, thereby renewing the law of God in our hearts and minds through the manifestation of the only begotten Son and eternal Word of God, in the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus Christ, the Son of God and Son of Man, the firstborn among many brethren. The majority of our audio messages come from our Sabbath Bible studies, delivered by Brother J.S. Lowther at a Sabbath convocation centered around the patriarchal family structure near Marietta, Ohio. Contact us by mail at Box 134, 140 Gross Street, Marietta, Ohio, 45750. Find related messages relevant to the systematic theology offered by Renewed Covenant Ministry at renewedcovenantministry.com. And now for the message.
So today we're going to break away from the Bible study that I had said we were going to focus on this Sabbath for two reasons. First reason, it's been a hectic, crazy week, and I wasn't able to get my notes in order enough where I thought it would be a good part of a series. Because when I put a series together, what I like to do is have it very consistent where it flows so it can be documented for the future and people can go back and reference it as a big whole, as a whole where it's conveying a subject clearly for study, for Bible study. And I wasn't able to do that this week, particularly because of the second reason, because everyone went nuts this week because of coronavirus. COVID-19, the dreaded virus. So instead, there is a particular chapter that we are going to Bible study on in relationship to what's going on in society right now, which does tie into our Bible study on church government that we have been looking at, that we are skipping today. And that is Isaiah chapter 3. I've already shared this once with some folks by email in discussing what is going on. And there is a lot that we could say about the fear that's going on in society right now on account of sickness or potential sickness or whatever is happening. Pestilence, as the Bible would call it. But what that means to a Christian should be what we discuss on days of Holy Convocation. I was reminded by Robert Dabney earlier in the week through audiobooks that on Sabbath time, whenever so many people talk about politics, they're actually bringing in that which is unholy into the day of holy worship called the Sabbath, which is a day that we are to keep holy for the Lord. And so rather than getting too far into the subject matter of what's going on in society, rather look at a biblical example of some comparative language and reasoning as to why things happen, and then considering it in our modern context as to what's happening here. So I'm also going to look at a book out of the Apocrypha, Sirach chapter 2, and ending this Bible study, which is another summary of what is written in other places in the Bible, but it's also a very good chapter to meditate on in times of trouble. But let's go to Isaiah chapter 3 and start working our way through that. Isaiah chapter 3, starting in verse 1, says, "For behold, the Lord Yahweh of hosts does take away from Jerusalem and from Judah the stay and the staff," which is a reference to food, "even the whole stay of bread, the whole stay of water." Now, Jerusalem was a walled city, had walls round about it. Judah, on the other hand, was an entire state, as we would consider it, a tribal territory. And in this case here, it could be referring to the whole house of Judah, which would include the tribe of Benjamin's possessions as well. And so the house of Judah is in reference here. And so Yahweh starts out with a proclamation in this "Behold," where he proclaims to the walled city, the main city where the temple was, and Judah, the place where Yahweh had set his name, the tribe in which he had set his name, that he had a prophecy given to Isaiah that would say that the food supply and the water supply was going to be affected. He was going to take it away. For a walled city, that's understandable. If it's not grown inside there and you can't sustain the population, then you can't bring anything in. And if you don't bring anything in to the walls, then it can't be there. So that makes sense. Judah, on the other hand, is a little harder to understand because it means the whole country of Judah, which was separated from Israel already at this time, were two countries, the house of Israel and the house of Judah, was going to have a famine, basically, as we would understand it. Or it could be on account of a pestilence or a war. It all depends. And that was going to be affected. And so a lot of what this is going to talk about hereafter is going to start with this sentiment. Starts with the sentiment of how this will affect what comes next. It says, the mighty man, the Geber, the warrior, that is, the man of war, the judge, the prophet, the prudent or the wise, and the ancient, meaning the elders. The captain of 50, the honorable man, meaning the one lifted up, doesn't necessarily mean he is an honorable person, but the one lifted up in honor, the greatly esteemed person, the one who has precedent. The counselor, the cunning artificer, meaning the workers, and the eloquent orator, the great speakers. It's kind of politicians, it sounds like a little bit, huh? And I will give children to be their princes, and babes will rule over them. Listen to what that says. I will give children to be their princes, and babes will rule over them. Babies. Now, we all know that an infant can't really rule over a person, right? So this is obviously either referring to mentality, the mentality of children, the mentality of babies, or it's talking about a form of pediarchy, right? Child worship, so to speak, or child leadership, where you let the kids dictate authority. Everything revolves around the kids. But this is spoken as a form of punishment. While most people would think that, well, that's not a bad thing, right? To have kids, to have children, that's a good thing. In this case, this is punishment when people have their children to be their princes, their rulers, and babies to be their heads, because it creates a very infantile mindset in society, not unlike what we're seeing in the modern day. So when people start saying, oh, wow, things are so bad in the modern day, it's never been like this. You just got to go back and read Isaiah chapter 3, and you'll see how Yahweh deals with it. You'll see how he deals with the mighty man, deals with the man of war, the warriors, the judges, or those who should be judges, the prophets, your ministers, your preachers, ones who supposedly declare the word of the Lord unto you, and the prudent, those who are supposed to be wise, your college men, your university professors, the ancient, the old man who should have wisdom, the captain of 50, which is among the smaller ones, in the honorable man, the counselor, even the cunning artificer, the guy who works for a living, and who's good at what he does, and the one who can speak well. To them he will give children as their princes, and he will give babies to rule them. And then verse 5 says, and the people shall be oppressed. See, because that type of infantile mindset is oppressive. They don't know it's oppressive because they're thinking like their kids, thinking like their children, like their babies. But it's an oppressive mindset. It's an oppressive society to live in. The people shall be oppressed by this. What shall they be oppressed by? Babies as rulers, children as their princes. That's what they will be oppressed by. Everyone will be oppressed by the other, is what is said next. So every man will oppress each other also. Everyone by his own neighbor. The child will behave himself proudly against the elder, the ancient man, the old man, the presbyter that we've been talking about. You don't know anything, old man. You're just an old fuddy-duddy. The way you guys acted back in the day, it's old school. He didn't know anything. All that religious stuff, that oppression, it's all racist. Y'all are haters. You didn't know what you're doing. We're going to do it better. Now children are going to rule over you. Babes, we're going to be your rulers. We're the ones in society who need to tell you what to do. And so not only do we have now people oppressing one another, and we have neighbor oppressing neighbor, we also then have child, whether it be the child of the old man or whether it is just children against the old, who are going to oppress those who should be in authority. That's what's going to happen. But in Isaiah 3, a long time ago this was going to happen. It has nothing to do with what we're seeing today. It's perfectly normal and adult to believe that men can be women and women can be men. Not infantile mindset at all. It's perfectly normal to think that homosex is a normal practice in society. There's nothing wrong with that at all, right? Or is it an infantile mindset wherein we see society that practice such things throughout history oppressing one another? And so what do we see next? The base against the honorable. The base or the low person, that which is very low, oppresses the honorable person. What's that mean? Well, from a standpoint of the honor we've been dealing with in the past, we heard honor your father and your mother. We also heard honor the old man, the face of the old man. Rise up and show him reverence, right? We have that, which would correspond to what we're talking about. But then who's the base? That would be either the young that are ignorant and foolish and they don't know any better. Or it could be talking in a general sense of what we all would understand to be base. What is very low, oppressing those who should have higher honorable standards. In other words, that which is base, that everyone at one time knew was base in society, that knew what was disgusting in society, that knew what was wrong in society, that knew what was immoral in society, that was low, he's a low kind of person, would rise up against those who were honorable, trying to do the honorable things, those people that would promote the type of mindset that would be honorable towards their parents, their father and their mother, so that their days would be long or prolonged in the land that the Lord God gave them. There's, of course, that type of base and honorable also that this could be referring to. Either one, I think, is very applicable considering the context. And so then we start to see some of what happens in this society eventually, right? After the people are oppressed by the children that rule and the babes that rule them, and the people oppress each other, the neighbors oppress one another, and the children behave themselves proudly against the ancients and the base against those who are honorable, and the honorable become a detestable people. Then after that judgment takes place and that happening occurs, then in 6 it says, when a man shall take hold of his brother of the house of his father, saying, you have clothing, you be our ruler. There's a period of time that has lapsed between what we see in verses 5 and verses 6. There's a period of time that has lapsed. Because after that mentality festers and breeds, eventually the mind goes back to being normal in some capacity. At least saying clothing's a good thing. Someone who has something, at least anything, should rule us. Because at least they can give us something. Not like a baby who can't give you anything, or a child who can give you very little. But in this case here, we at least have a family member going to another family member and saying, you have clothing, be our ruler. At least the guy could hold on to his clothes and teach you something. And let this ruin be under thy hand. But see, it's a passing of the buck. It's not a repentance. It's go back to your brother want his clothing and say, you can rule over us if we can have part in your clothing, and then my ruin can become your ruin. So kind of like spreading the non-wealth because the wealth is spent. 7 says, in that day, when this has come about, when this judgment has come to pass, when you are at this level in society, in that day shall he swear, saying, I will not be a healer, for in my house there is not bread or clothing. Make me not a ruler of the people. I don't know who the he is necessarily. Is it the one they came to, the brother? But there is one who will swear, saying, I can't heal this problem. I don't have in my house bread or clothing. I don't have what I need. You can't make me a ruler of this people. I don't want to share in your disruin. And so the prophet says this, for Jerusalem is ruined and Judah is fallen, because their tongue and their doings are against Yahweh. They are against the Lord. To provoke the eyes of his glory. Let that sink in. Jerusalem was the place of the temple. Jerusalem is the place of the courts of gold. Jerusalem is the place of Solomon's temple of cedar. Jerusalem is the most beautiful of cities in all of the land of Israel, which Yahweh God had given to his chosen people at this time. And it is said that Jerusalem is ruined and Judah is fallen, because their tongue and their doings are against Yahweh, the Lord. Their doings provoke the eyes of Yahweh's glory. The eyes of Yahweh's glory is kind of an interesting thing. It pretty much insinuates that he can see everything, but they don't really think about that. They might have the temple, and what happens in the temple stays in the temple, but what happens out of the temple, he doesn't see that. Big mistake. Kind of like how we think about it, you know, on the Sabbath or at church, people act a certain way and they do a certain thing and they think certain thoughts. For that period of time, they're with other people reading their Bible and singing a few songs and bless you, brother. But when they leave, what is it? Does he not see you then? Same idea, I think, is being conveyed. The provoking of the eyes of Yahweh's glory. The eyes that see into the heart of a man, into the mind of a man. And so, what does Yahweh say in response to the provoking of the eyes of his glory? He says, the show of their countenance witnesses against them, and they declare their sin as Sodom. They hide it not. Woe unto their soul, for they have rewarded evil to themselves. This is a good thing to stop and think about. People oftentimes ask the question about why God is angry with men for sinning if they are sinners, if they have a sin nature. We often ask questions like that. And Yahweh says that the show of their countenance, the way that they act, the way that they look, the things that Yahweh sees is their own witness against them. They witness against themselves for evil. They declare. Now, a declaration is not like Yahweh just happened to observe it. It's like saying, my sin is the sin of Sodom. I declare it. We all know what Sodom was destroyed for, right? Homosexuals, primarily. And a lot of other fornication and wickedness that goes unmentioned in the biblical text. But the one sin that's mentioned is the lowest, vilest debauchery of man. The absolute infantile mentality that is so confused that it does not know how nature works anymore. And so we're told that the show of their countenance, what they do, witnesses against them. And they declare their sin as Sodom, and they hide it not. And so the show of their countenance witnesses against them, and they declare their sin as Sodom. They hide it not. They're not afraid of it. They don't feel like they need to hide it. And he says, woe to their soul. See, it's a soul problem. It's deeper than just the body. For they have rewarded it unto themselves. So why does God have the ability to judge? Because they rewarded it to themselves. They knew it, and they didn't care. They've convinced themselves that it's not a big deal, that the eyes of his glory won't mind seeing the debauchery. And so the prophet says in verse 10, "Say ye to the righteous that it shall be well with him, for they shall eat the fruit of their doings. Say ye to the righteous that it shall be well with them, for they shall eat of the fruit of their doings. And woe unto the wicked, it shall be ill with him, for the reward of his hand shall be given him. As for my people, children are their oppressors. Women rule over them. My people, O my people, they which lead thee cause thee to err and destroy the way of thy path, the way in which you go. Yahweh stands up to plead, and he stands to judge the people." Both Yahweh is pleading and he is judging. And what was said last? To the righteous, we're told, it shall be well with you. And then it says, woe unto the wicked. Ill is your reward of your hands that will be given to him. Now, you can take verse 10 many different ways, but I think what it's letting us know is that the righteous, because of their righteousness, there is a different mentality that takes place. Though they have not participated in the evil that has taken place, though their sins are covered by God, that's the only way that you get declared righteous, they're still, however, going to have to deal with the problems in society. They're still going to have to deal with the fruit of the doings of the people. It's just the way it works. But woe to the wicked, because it shall be ill with them. Sickness. Ill means sickness. It shall be bad. Because their reward of his hands will be given to him. They will get that reward we prior discussed. Reward that was prior mentioned. They have rewarded evil to themselves. So the righteous have a blessing, and they're going to have to get a mouthful of it, but they get to spit it out. Whereas the wicked get ill. The wicked, it's going to be ill with him. It will be bad for them, because the reward of his hands will be given to him. God is not punishing them for what they did not do. God is not even punishing them for their sin nature. God's punishing them for what they've rewarded to themselves and that they have loved to do, as he does to all, with the exception of those who are declared righteous. And so again, the prophet in 12 brought up, "As for my people, children are their oppressors." He brings it up one more time, and then he adds something that he didn't add last time. Women rule over them. O my people, they which lead thee, referring to the women and the children, cause you to err, and they destroy the way of your path. And so Yahweh now stands up to plead. That means he's begging with them. He stands up to plead. He stands also to judge at the same time. And of course, for those of us who understand the nature of justification, this makes perfect sense. This makes perfect sense how Yahweh both stands to plead and to judge at the same time. Because we understand, or at least should understand, that there's only one atonement and only one propitiation, that's by faith in Christ, wherein everyone stands on the level ground before the throne of God by faith. So when Yahweh stands to plead and he stands to judge the people, it is the same word that goes forth in judgment. But those who are righteous are rendered righteous, and those who are rendered wicked based on only the merit of the only one who could ever declare them righteous. Yahweh will enter into judgment with the ancients. Listen to the plea upon the people. Listen to the judgment that goes out to the people. This corresponds very much so to what we see happening in our society today, and I'm sure would happen in Isaiah's society in chapter 3. Yahweh will enter into judgment with the ancients, that is with the elders, that is with the elder men and women of the land, the ancients of his people, the ones who should be the rulers, but they aren't. Yahweh holds them accountable. because they, regardless of if they have taken their authority or not, have the authority to take, and they refuse to take it. So Yahweh enters into judgment with the ancients of his people and the princes thereof, not the ones that are babies and children, not the children that are princes, but the ones who actually should be the princes, the ancients that actually should be the rulers, not the babies. Yahweh looks at the actual ancients, the actual rulers of the people, the actual princes of the people, and that's who he judges. He doesn't judge the babies for being babies and the children for being children. He judges the old men with wisdom who are letting things go for their own purposes, and thereby bringing judgment upon the land. Yahweh enters into judgment with the ancients of his people and the princes thereof, for you have eaten up the vineyard. The spoil of the poor is in your house. They were paid off. They've eaten the vineyard, and the spoil of the poor is in their house. Because the ancient, the men who should have been in charge, because of the princes that were in charge, at one time were paid off, and they ate the crop that should have been others. They stole the crop, and the spoil of the poor, that which was taken from those who had less, was in their house. Yahweh will judge for that. Now, in Isaiah's day, I can't tell you exactly what happened, but because things generally repeat themselves, I'm sure it had something to do with taking from a people, from a system, like maybe we could call Social Security or welfare, something like that, wherein the older generation benefits and those who are truly in need get nothing and no one helps them out, those who truly are in need. And so the princes, the government is fat, they've got what they need, and the ancients who were at one time in charge in the right way, they've got what they need, but the people don't have what they need anymore. The spoil of the poor is in their houses. So they don't take care of the poor as the law commands, the true poor, not the slothful. I'm not talking about the slothful, the people who refuse to work and get poor. I'm talking about the poor, those who can't work, or those that have problems, not sloth. Big difference between poverty and sloth, or I should say poor and poverty. So the prophet says in verse 15, "What mean ye that ye beat my people to pieces?" So he's asking the princes and the ancients, why do you beat my people to pieces? What do you mean by this? And you grind the faces of the poor, says the Lord Yahweh of hosts. Moreover, Yahweh says, because the daughter of Zion are haughty. Now we're going to talk about the girls. Now we're going to talk about the women of America, I mean Zion. Now we're going to talk about the way that the people act. Yahweh said, because the daughters are haughty and they walk with their stretched forth necks and they have those wanton flippy eyes, you know, those eyes that kind of just tell you whatever, that, those eyes. Ones that think they know everything, the ones that they think that they don't need you, they don't need men. Carry themselves like they don't need anything but themselves. They walk and they mince as they go, mincing as they go, mouthy, making the tinkling with their feet. Therefore, the Lord will smite with a scab the crown of the head of the daughters of Zion. And Yahweh will discover their secret parts. In that day, Yahweh will take away the bravery of their tinkling ornaments. That's right, bravery. Walking around like they're just as good as men, just as strong, just as smart. Given, there are some women that are just as strong, and certainly there are women that are just as smart as men. But men and women have their place, regardless of how infantile our mentality has become. We all know it, and we all recognize it. But if you think you can walk around and pretend like you're brave, mincing as you go with your mouthy little attitude, the Lord is going to bring a scab upon your head. I think both metaphorically, this is speaking your head, as in where your husband should be, because it's probably been cut off. And your head, as in your hair, as in what you think is beautiful about yourself. The Lord will take away by that action, and also in an action that I won't even go into. It's entirely understandable. With scabs that we don't like to talk about. Oh, how it happens. When they think they're brave. And when the tinkling ornaments about their feet keep on that tinkling as they mince and speak. We've got a society that acts not too much differently than this. And their call, and their round tires like the moon. Of course, this is referring to ways that we don't dress, but it's particularly their clothing, their headwear. And the chains and their bracelets and their mufflers, which we don't even wear mufflers anymore. And I don't think it's talking about hot rod cars. No, it's pendants and bracelets and scarves is what it would read in a modern English. And the prior would have said anklets and headbands. Their headdresses, their armlets, their sashes, their perfume boxes, and their amulets. Or as the King James said, their bonnets, their ornaments of their legs, their headbands, their tablets, and their earrings. You know, the prophet's really elaborating on this. The rings and their nose jewels. Their changeable suits of apparel, all those clothes in the closet that we just love to have. I'm going to read it out of the ESV because I think it will help with making the point. The signet rings and the nose rings, the festival robes, the mantles, the cloaks, and the handbags, purses. The mirrors, the linen garments, their turbans and their veils. And so listen to the words of the prophet of what he will reward the women of Zion with. Instead of perfume, there will be rottenness of smell. The scabs stink after a while. Instead of belts, a rope. Nothing fancy to see here, folks. Instead of well-set hair, bald. Instead of a rich robe, skirts of sackcloth. Branding now instead of beauty. Things aren't looking real good for Jerusalem. Things aren't looking real good for the daughters of Judah in the times to come. From the prophet, of course, not in the modern day. Your men shall fall by the sword, your mighty men will die in battle. And her gates, going all the way back to the first verse of the chapter, and her gates shall lament, and they will mourn, empty. She shall sit on the ground. But in chapter 4, the thought is continued for just 6 more verses. After that, 7 women will take hold of one man in that day. And they will say, we will eat our own bread and we will wear our own clothes. See the difference between what the brother came to the other brother and said, you've got clothes, rule over us. This one says, we'll eat our own bread, we'll wear our own clothes. Only let us be called by your name to take away our reproach. But it's all still about the same. Our ruin is under your hand, is what the one said to his brother. And this is take away our reproach. In this particular situation, the reproach refers to the wantonness But it also goes back further than that. In that day, the branch of Yahweh shall be beautiful and glorious, and the fruit of the land shall be the pride and honor of the survivors of Israel. A huge change. I don't know why somebody didn't put 4:1 in Isaiah 3 at the very end, because that's where it kind of seems like it belongs to me, but you know, chapter breaks and verses are not inspired. It should be 3:27, in my opinion. It's just my opinion. Because that actually ends the thought of the woman. And then a new thought begins, going back to the righteous. And we're going to elaborate on this a little bit. In that day, when things finally get this bad, in that day, after those things have completed themselves, as always, the branch of Yahweh will be beautiful and glorious again. It's always after adversity and punishment that people somewhat come to their senses. Never sticks around very long because the Song of Moses has to continue to keep running its course. For some reason, that's how sheep are made. But when punishment is doled out upon a people, there's generally a time afterwards where that punishment leads to the beautiful and glorious fruit of Yahweh. That's called repentance. What the fruit of Yahweh is. Fruit of the land shall be the pride and honor of the survivors of Israel. Perhaps it's talking about the people getting the spoils of what's left. I highly doubt it, though, because it didn't sound like much was left after that. It sounded like pretty rough stuff. And he who is left in Zion and remains in Jerusalem will be called holy. Everyone who has been recorded for life or in the record, the book of life, in Jerusalem. When the Lord shall have washed away the filth of the daughters of Zion and cleansed the bloodstains that are in Jerusalem from its midst by the spirit of judgment and by the spirit of burning, then Yahweh will create over the whole site of Mount Zion and over her assemblies a cloud by day and a smoke and a shining of a flaming fire by night. For over all the glory there will be a canopy. There will be a booth for shade by day from the heat and a refuge and a shelter from the storm and rain. So Yahweh is speaking in a way that's giving some kind of hope. Now, what do we see in Isaiah chapter 4 and Isaiah chapter 3 that came before it? I think what we see is a pattern of the way a country that at one time or a people at one time had God's blessing on them, God's choosing on them, a city set on a hill, so to speak, in the downward spiral that takes us from okay from to bad to worse to really bad to horrible. And we see the judgment of God playing itself out throughout it. What particularly brought these verses to mind was God's entering into judgment with the ancients, considering our present Bible study that I've been working on, as well as learning that this sickness that we have is attacking older people above 60 years of age, which is the age of an elder according to Scripture. It's the last bracket of what is mentioned in the book of Leviticus for the estimation of a soul. Starts at 60 and up in age, and they're actually the most valuable people according to it, which doesn't make sense if your estimation is for work. Getting an old man as a worker doesn't sound like you're actually getting very much, but in the biblical understanding of it, you're getting the wisdom, and the wisdom is valuable. It's honorable. It's to be honored. And so it corresponds exactly with the fifth commandment and with the law that we read in Leviticus 19 on the subject. So I thought that it was very applicable to what we have in society going on and gives us a lot to think about as far as what we are seeing. But what it gives us more as Christians, hopefully, is those who are trusting in the righteousness of the righteous one to be our justification in our times of judgment, is that though we're going to have to taste of the fruit of their doings, we're going to have to taste the fruit of their doings. The righteous will continue to be righteous. Just as the proverb says that David quotes to Saul, concerning Saul, wickedness proceedeth from the wicked, so righteousness proceeds from the righteous. The righteous man falls seven times and gets up again, but the wicked fall into mischief and stay there. That's how it works. And so for those of us who believe we're covered by the covering of Christ in these times that are coming, regardless of what they mean, this could all disappear next week in society. This whole coronavirus scare, like the SARS flu and all the other things that we've been told about, it could just disappear next week. People could just decide it's nothing. And, you know, maybe it is nothing. To a Christian, on the other hand, it is nothing, because our God is everything. But that's what declares you righteous in the day of judgment. That's how God pleads for you while he judges the others, by the righteous standard of Christ, by the righteous standard of his law. And so we have the ability to know that judgment eventually will come on this society. Is it now? Is it coming? I can't tell you. But the most important focus, I think, to have is to and not be the people who are ill from what is happening in society, as society gets whichever way it's going. And to hopefully be the ones who are alive, that in that day the branch of Yahweh shall be beautiful. We know the branch is a specific reference to Christ, the branch. We know that Christ is going to be the one that shall be beautiful and glorious, and the fruit of the land will be the pride and the honor of the survivors of Israel. That fruit directly corresponds to the righteous from the prior verse. And so I thought it was appropriate to put this together to not only point out what's happening and what's going to happen, because indeed children are our rulers, our princes, and babes are the rulers, the heads of the people. People have a head like a baby right now. We are heading down that way, and we have been for a long time in the society that we call America. And so while I'm not going to dwell on politics or anything to do with what is happening in that sense, I am going to apply it. Because regardless of when this time happens, it will happen. People will get their head on straight again at some point. And those whose fruit is going to be the pride and honor are going to be those survivors of Israel who have the branch, Christ, that is beautiful and glorious to them even in the hardest of times. Because if you don't have that, if to live as Christ and to die as gain, if that is not your understanding of the way the world works, there's a high likelihood that you are not a Christian anyway, and you will suffer the fate of the ill, wicked. When we say that we believe, oftentimes people do not, I think, really know what that means. A person says, "I believe." I think a good reading of John 5 and 6 will get your mind into tune to what believing really means in Jesus. But a lot of people don't realize that believing does not mean, because things are bad, God hasn't done what I want him to do, because my bills aren't paid, because I was in debt, which God told me not to get into debt, but I got into debt anyway, and now I don't have the money to pay the debt. And I'm mad at God because, well, God, you let this happen. No, actually, you got rewarded for your own doings. Sad but true. Hard reality to swallow. Because your mind wasn't in good times on the things of Lord, seeking first the kingdom and his righteousness, then all else to be added. It wasn't. That does not mean that you're not righteous and you're not able to get through this, but it does mean that times could be harder in these types of situations, as we see in Isaiah 3. And so there's a passage in Sirach, I think, that is very good for a time of temptation, as we are going to see in times to come, particularly temptations where we want to blame God for the things we see in society and the pain and the suffering that we see, though we need to understand that what we see and what we endure as Christians is to prepare the way for the branch in the future, for the start of a beautiful and glorious beginning at some other point. It will happen. It will be the pride and honor of Israel again, and of those who survive what happens. They will be the ones called holy because they were recorded in the book of life. And so I'm going to read out of the Apocrypha, out of one chapter. I'm going to read the entirety of the chapter. It is only 18 verses. But I think it's really good advice that should be considered in times of temptation, which is testing. It says, my son, this is Sirach 2, and then start in verse 1. My son, if thou come to serve Yahweh, prepare your soul for temptation. My son, if you come to serve Yahweh, prepare your soul for temptation. Set your heart aright. Constantly endure. Make not haste in the time of trouble. Cleave unto him and depart not away, that you may be increased at the latter end. Pretty much what we just read in a nutshell. Whatsoever is brought upon thee, take it cheerfully. Be patient when thou art changed to be in a low estate. For gold is tried in the fire, and acceptable men in the furnace of adversity. Believe in him, or have faith in him, and he will help you. Order your ways aright, your paths aright, and trust in him. Yea, the fear of Yahweh waits for his mercy, and it goes not aside, lest ye fall. Ye that fear Yahweh, believe him, have faith in him. Your reward shall not fail. Ye that fear Yahweh, hope for good, for the everlasting joy and mercy. Look at the generations of old and see, did ever any trust in Yahweh and become confused? Did any abide in his fear and was truly forsaken? Or whom did he ever despise that called upon him? For the Lord is full of compassion and mercy, long-suffering, he is very pitiful in forgiving sins, and saves in the time of affliction. Woe be to the fearful hearts. Woe be to the faint hands and the sinners that go two ways. Double-minded man there. Woe unto him that is faint-hearted, for he believes not. Therefore shall he not be defended. Woe unto you that have lost your patience. And what will you do when Yahweh will visit you? They that fear Yahweh will not disobey his word. They that love him will yet keep his ways. They that fear Yahweh will seek that which is well, that which is pleasing unto him. They that love him shall be filled with his law. They that fear Yahweh will prepare their hearts and humble their souls in his sight, saying, we will fall into the hands of Yahweh and not into the hands of men. For as his majesty is, so is his mercy. It's actually particularly interesting that Sirach 2 says, we will fall into the hands of Yahweh and not into the hands of men, because that's a quote from David from the time when he was punished for numbering the people. And he was given three options by the prophet Gad, who was spoken to by the angel of Yahweh that came to him at the place of the threshing floor of Ornan the Jebusite, which is then the place where the temple was built in Jerusalem. But Gad told him that there were three things that he had to choose from for his punishment for going against God's law. One was that he could have famine, pestilence, sickness, or the sword of men, war, would come against him. And David chose pestilence because he said he knew Yahweh would be merciful. To fall into the hands of Yahweh was better than to fall into the hands of men. So this very last verse here is actually partially a quote of David's as he responded to the prophet Gad, who would then take the words back to the angel for Yahweh to hear, the angel of Yahweh to hear, as to why he was choosing the choice that he made. And David was yet declared righteous, though he had to endure punishment because of what he had done. And so I think there is a lot to learn from Sirach. That's one of my favorite books out of the apocryphal writings, actually, or the book we call Apocrypha, the Deuterocanon. And that particular set of wisdom, I think, is something that we all lack at and that we should all strive for. But it's I think more important right now in what we're experiencing as a fearful people in America right now. Pretty much 50 states in the Union that are wiping the stores clean of fear, just by sheer fear. And so Sirach tells us that those that are fearful do not believe. Plain and simple. I think we could dig up some Bible verses, since a lot of people don't care about what the Apocrypha has to say, but it's pretty well substantiated. So if there's one thing that we need to keep in our minds as we see this thing progress, getting worse, maybe just going away, and we go, yay, it didn't happen, we can go back to living wanton. We can go back to acting like those daughters of Zion, with our necks stretched out, mincing as we go with our tinkling feet. We can go back to a nation full of that. Because if you noticed, one other thing I'd like to mention that does apply to modern day is that I have been so sick and tired for the last year of having to hear about how transgender weirdness, every time I heard something on the radio or the newspaper or a magazine or anything, that's all you heard about. Transgender this, transgender that, homosexuality this, homosexual that. All I've heard about for the last 2 weeks is sickness. And it's kind of like music to my ears, because I'm sick of hearing about the rest. At least I'm hearing something that applies to me. But there should be some wisdom, I think, that we hear in that. Why did it all change? Fear, that's why. They're not out there just dancing it up now, how great it is to be weird. Or queer, as they call it. Now they're scared out of their minds. Wrath of God is upon them. But it's not really fear for the right reason. It's not the fear that's going to lead to wisdom. It's the fear that's going to lead to further fear and utter destruction. Life that's not eternal. But there will be some who are going to repent. And thank God for that. So, again, survivors of Israel will have their fruit, and their fruit will only be in the branch. That's what will be glorious. That's going to be what is going to be brilliant in that day. So I think that's good stuff to meditate on. We are planning on picking up next week with the series we've been working on. Hopefully we'll build on that some more on church government, because it does apply to Christians. And when things go bad, you're going to wish you had a good family. Young people to help the old people with wisdom to teach the young. And that's what that series is all about. Because when that vacuum is made and this society falls, something needs to go in its place. Families should be ready to be that government. Sadly, we aren't. We aren't. So that's why that's important also.
This is Renewed Covenant Ministry.